All right. JB, Johnny B. You know, one of the first questions that I wanted to ask you was, you know, what is one of your earliest memories about Braddock Park? But I wanted, before you answer that question, I want to share with you mine.
Okay.
I don't think I've ever told anybody this story, but it has to do with you. And that's why I want to tell it now.
I hope I wasn't.
So you may remember I had a sister, or have a sister named Nancy.
Yes.
And Nancy was in the Jerry Fleming age group, right? Emile, Chucky, those were all her friends.
You're saying like Chucky O'Hara?
Chucky O'Hara, yeah.
Yeah.
She was hanging out at the park when you and I would have been 5 or 6 years old.
Okay.
Okay. And I remember one, and of course, at 5 or 6, I wasn't allowed at the park just because it was far away. You were, because you lived across the street.
And I had a bunch of babysitters, you know what I mean?
That's right. You had your sisters and you had your big brother. Yeah. So one night my sister came home, and I remember this like it was yesterday. And she's telling my mother in the kitchen a story about this kid at the park. And so, you know, my ears perked up. I just kind of listened in, and she tells a story about this little kid who none of the big guys can beat in stickball or steam. And of course, my mother doesn't know what these things are. So my sister's explaining what stickball is.
Yeah.
She says, you're not going to believe it. Like, this kid is pitching and he's striking the big guys out. And then he gets up and he hits and he's smacking it out of the park. And right, so finally I got really curious, and I said, who are you talking about? And she said, oh, you don't know him, because you know you've never been there before, but his name's Johnny Beggins. And I was like, wow. And I can remember thinking, it was probably 2 years before I actually got up to the park for the first time, but I can remember thinking that you were this phenomenon. You, because that's my sister was in awe of you. And the natural athlete that you were and are, you know, that you were just born to do that, you know, just incredible. That's my earliest Braddock Park recollection.
Well, if you remember, my dad was the baseball coach at Our Lady of Lourdes.
Yeah,
He coached all those guys, like guys like Mario Iovino, John Scotto. John Scotto lived by you. He lived.
Yeah, right.
He lived a couple of blocks, I'm gonna say, west of you, because heading toward Lourdes by the Galino's house. You remember when Mr. Galino lived over there? And John Scotto might have been the greatest athlete in Queens Village history. He was like Jim Thorpe, man. He was amazing. But my father coached those teams for years, so that's why I said before, I had babysitters up the yin yang, like, and, you know what I mean? And I'd go, my mother would open the door and I would run across the street. And when I couldn't cross the street, I would run down the block and stand in front of Patty Gallagher's house and scream somebody in my house to come cross the street, because I was so young. And I do remember that. I remember that. And it was great growing up, even when I was younger. Even though it took us a couple of years, as we could probably get into later, the park, the guys older than us, if we were 10 or 11 and 12, the guys who were 16, 17, 18 were deep into heroin and shit like that. It wasn't.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. And I can honestly say I never had a problem. No one ever messed with, I don't remember anybody messing with us. You know what I mean? But that was funny, because I'd be at the park, there'd be softball games, baseball games, and my mother would just open the door and then cross me, and then I was on my way. You know what I mean? So it was fun.
Yeah. The only guy I remember who was affected by that was a guy by the name of Lenny Pesch.
Got to go a little higher, Mike. Lenny Pesch.
Lenny Pesch.
He had the shakes. He had that twitch.
Yeah, he had that twitch. Now, maybe that was just he was born with that, but I always had attributed to him being drug involved.
Well, I can honestly tell you, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Gary Granata. Remember Gary Granata? He lived over by Paul Lonergan, or I'm going to say by the Safaris and stuff like that. He told me one time, Lenny had a bad trip.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of those guys got really fucked up, Mike, you know?
Yeah, like I remember.
Eric Fresley's brother, Ricky.
Yeah.
He died of like a heroin overdose. Terrible, terrible thing. And you had a lot of guys who never came back, guys who got into it and didn't know any better. Just like the kids who were like Jamie Fleming's age and Bimbo who got into heroin. And, you know, remember Frankie Pepe?
Yeah.
Right. I got a story for Frankie Pepe. Write that name down and tell me later. And that story is going to turn your fucking head on your shoulders.
Frankie Pepe.
Yeah.
So since we're talking about the older group, one of the things that I wanted to ask you about was Jerry Fleming. Because I don't think anybody knew Jerry, you know, in our group as well as you did. I think we were all in this weird in awe of Jerry and afraid of Jerry, all in the same breath. you know, I can remember Jerry being just so quick-witted that, you know, you needed to really calculate whether you could win this argument or this tease with him. And if not, you were on your way to being the butt of the jokes for the next half hour.
Well, no. It could last for years. You know what I mean? Remember Bobby Green, who we all know and love. What was the nickname that Jerry gave him? Burgical, the village idiot, you know? And that lasted for years. You know, I was little Begs, mini Begs, stupid Begs, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, Jerry had a nickname for everybody.
Well, everybody did in Queens Village. When I was a cop in a Midtown North, actually, there's the shirt. I don't know if you can see it, but it's a Midtown North shirt. And so we were sitting around a bar, me, Barry Burns, Patton, Gowrie, Tommy Evans, and stuff like that. And we're all talking. And someone said, because probably 30 people in a bar, and the guy goes, one fucking question. Is everybody in Queens Village, you know, Belrose, whatever, have a nickname? Well, we look at it. I was Beggs, you know, Horny Warny, you know, Howie. And, you know, you had Jerry, Gal, Burnsy, you know what I mean?
Whiskey.
Fee. Albano, and I was sitting there laughing because it was so funny. I went through everybody's name. I went down like Johnny Fleming was Flem, and you never call. Hey, John, you know, it was, if someone called you by your real name, it was either you getting punched or they owed you money or you owed them.
Yeah.
Money, you
know what I mean? Yeah. Well, I remember when I first started calling Charlie O Chuck.
Yeah.
He said, you know, like that was really, really special to him. That he had a nickname now, you know.
Well, I thought Charlie O was a great nickname.
I thought Charlie O
was one of the many cast of characters that, you know what I mean? He would do something crazy and you would just say, all right, it's Charlie being Charlie, and you went on your way, you know what I mean? But like that would. The nickname, everybody had a nickname. It was so much, it actually took a cop that I work with, like I said, to point that out. And I still giggle when I think about that story. Oh, you have Burnsy, you have Beggs, you have Fee. And I was useless.
Yeah, so Jerry somehow was the, I don't know, call him the king or the president of the park.
Right. He was the mayor, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, he lived on Edmore right there, three houses from the park. So, you know, if I was up at the park, even going back until I became a police officer, I lived across the street. Well, I don't want to sit in a house and watch TV. You went up to the park. Sooner or later, someone was going to show up. Yep. When we were growing up, we could have seven different crowds, enough to play softball from 10 o'clock in the morning till 11, you know, 7 o'clock at night. You know what I mean? All around the park, you'd have a bunch of kids, grown up girls and guys. And it was, you know, people don't understand that. I tell people, like, it was, I always compare it to Wonder Years, growing up in Belrose and Queens Village. But with, I think, a lot more fun than they ever showed on that TV show. But it was wonderful. And like I said, you could go up to the park, get into a softball game, a basketball game, play handball all day, play a tackle football game on the infield of the track. Or if you wanted to just go on the swings or remember the monkey bars?
We used to hang out there a lot.
The monkey bars, Michael, there was no padding, nothing on it. If you fell down from like the third level, your chin was going to get, it was like out of a freaking Monty Python skit. Yeah. You were going down and you were going down like a rock.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I can also remember when that pool was used.
My daughter
were up there when they actually ran water through that pool. When we were teenagers, they never did. But when we were little, they actually ran water in there. And, you know, it was 4 inches deep. It was piss warm. And it was great.
And the sprinklers would come out the sides.
Yeah.
But, you know, back in the day when, this is what I was told is before they used to have dances and show movies in that park.
No kidding.
That was before we were there, maybe in the mid 50s. Now, if you can ever, if I get this right, you'll love to watch this. It's on YouTube. I believe it's called The Braddock Boys. Mr. Hyland, remember Joni's father, the greatest, one of the greatest guys in the world. He's in it, and the guy did something like you doing. But these guys are in the 50s, and Mr. Hyland, we all know and love. That guy was he was a gentleman, funny as the day is long.
Yep.
And if he got mad at you, he could snap your neck in a second.
Yep. Yeah. One of my favorite memories of playing basketball when he was the coach was he was trying to teach us how to do take the ball from out of bounds in.
Yeah.
And Howard was the guy who was taking the ball in.
Right.
And he didn't throw it. And Mr. Hyland said, "Howard, you're not going to do a jig back there." And he takes the ball and he starts doing this dance. And Joe Howard and I were on the floor crying. I couldn't breathe for the rest of practice. He was so funny.
He was great. And I loved him. And his Joni and the daughters, they have an amazing in Rockefeller Center. It's called the Backyards Players. It's for handicapped kids, Down syndrome and things like that. Oh my God, Mike, they are doing God's work, man.
No kidding.
The Backyard Plays, Rockville Center. I mean, when they run like a benefit or a fundraiser, they can't count the money that comes in.
And no kidding.
I think if I remember correctly, I think Ellen's the top dog, Joni, and all the sisters. They had 5 or 6 sisters, and they finally had the youngest boy was a baby boy, and one girl in the Highlands was better looking than the next. So that's why Mr. Hyland probably had a bat or a shotgun somewhere in his house on 222nd Street. You know,
he was great.
Well, so going back, you want to get back to Jerry?
Tell me what else.
Jerry comes from his father was probably one of the great, his father's actually in the Softball Hall of Fame.
King in his court.
No, he beat King in his court twice.
Oh, I thought he was?
No, that was Eddie Fainer. Was the pitcher for the King in his court. Mr. Fleming beat him twice.
Kidding, wow.
And Mr. Fleming, I remember my mother told the story that when my mother and father moved in to Belrose on Fairbury Avenue, my father was walking through the park. So I guess we're going to say 1958, 1957, right? That my sister Eleanor was born in 55. I think they did 1 year in Brooklyn. And then my father came out to Belrose. And you know why? Our neighborhood was full of cops and firemen and city workers, because they weren't allowed to go into Nassau County until like 1961.
Oh, no kidding.
You could only go as far as the five boroughs. And then you know why they changed that? Because they wanted to, nothing but wanting to break the voting block.
Right.
When you had cops, firemen, or whatever, civil service, if you had a voting block that big, you could control an election. Then they let them go out to Nassau County and then Suffolk County. And then they also let them go up to Westchester and I believe Orange County. It's the one above that. I had a guy I worked with. He lived 80 miles from the fucking city. He was out of his mind. The guy was out of his mind. I said, you know, 80 miles. And he was living 2 days at his in-laws. I said, you must have a girlfriend on the side, because I'm like, that's a whole different story. And that's why we had so many people our age who were cops, firemen, you know, like, you know, everything. It was just the as far as we can go, you know?
Yeah. Yep. Yep. But I remember
Jerry. Jerry's father was just a great athlete. Jerry would come up the park. And like Jerry would, you know, I'd be sitting there in the park bench, like by the basketball courts near Fairbury.
Yep.
And like all of a sudden, Jerry would stroll, meander, like he walked, like he was like, a quarter of an inch off the ground. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And he'd come walking in and he'd look to his right and see if anybody's there. And he would just stick out his right hand and wiggle it the way he would leave and lift up his hands. Everybody would laugh every day. He would just come and wiggle his hand, come over, hang out sooner or later. Sooner or later, he'd get a young kid to go get his New York Post and a sandwich at K&L Deli.
Yep.
And just hang out. And Jerry, you know, Jerry was a big guy. He was 5'9", but he was big. But Jerry was a good athlete. You remember.
I remember.
He could shoot the basketball. He couldn't play a game because he was too big. But you ever try to beat him in stickball?
Yep. I remember him being an amazing or softball.
Yes.
The fact that he could get on base
was
always a miracle. And it was because
it was one of those guys that could use the bat like an extension of his arm. You know what I mean? He could whack it to, you know, right down the right field line or pull it. But of course, it was always a single because he couldn't run. It was part of the game, you know. And I really, Jerry was a great guy.
In softball, I remember sitting on the benches that are next to the handball court. And we were watching a Schaefer League game, right?
Yeah.
And Jerry gets up to bat. And, you know, Jerry's always a good hitter. He's always going to get on base. Yeah. He hits a line drive over the third base, gets one bounce to the left fielder. The left fielder throws him out at first base. And the crowd goes crazy.
Yeah.
Jerry turns around and drops his pants. That was it. It just leveled the benches. Everybody was on the ground, and he just walked back. That, you know, just like you're gonna make fun of me. You're gonna get my wrath.
Yeah, and he was so much, and he always had like, you know, just one liners, and he had some stories. As Nina would say, you know, you have to take every Jerry story with a grain of salt. You know what I mean? And but he was a wonderful guy. He got sick, cancer. You know,
oh, no kidding.
Oh, yeah, I'm gonna say, God, oh, well, on the picture I sent you,
it was 2002,
2004. I think he died in 2004. I was off the NYPD and I was the head of security at the Central Synagogue at 55th and Lex, the real nice reform. I don't know if you've ever been in it, it's stunning. Uh-huh. And I was the director of security there because Rabbi Peter loved having the Cardinals guy. I got the Cardinals guy. And it was a great gig. And so I'm going to say Jerry got sick 2000 maybe. And it was bad. It was terrible, man. And quick story, as you'll get Jerry's humor right away. My brother Jimmy said, listen, you got to call Jerry. He needs help. I said, what the fuck can I do? Well, you know, Jimmy, he goes, just call him, please. So I call him up, and Jerry was not in hospice, but he was sick, and he was going through cancer treatment. And he goes, Beggs, I don't know what to do. I said, Jerry, if there's any way I could possibly help you, you know, I would. Well, you know, I had St. Patrick's from all those years. You remember?
Right, right.
And so I had a lot of connections. Tons of – I was hooked, Mike. I'm not going to lie to you. I was hooked. And so his cancer, I hate cancer. I fucking hate cancer. His cancer meds were like $3,000 a month. Now, 3,000 a fucking month, Michael.
Wow.
And so what happened was, I'm going to start crying. I said, give me a day or two. So I went to Cardinal O'Connor and I told him the story. He goes, okay, you know, Monsignor Ralph. Monsignor Ralph was Bishop Daly's right-hand man, like first secretary.
Right.
In Brooklyn. So Cardinal O'Connor said, you know Bishop Daly and you know Monsignor Ralph. Call him. So I called Monsignor Ralph and I explained to him what I just said to you about Cherry. And I said, Monsignor, listen, I'm not saying he's the most Catholic, but $3,000, he's a Catholic kid from Queens Village. You know what I mean? Yep. I get a call. I get a call like 2 days later and it's Cherry. And he goes, Beggs, Catholic Charities got involved. And he goes, Beggs, I don't know what the fuck he did. My meds just went from 3,000 a month to 300 a month.
Wow.
And so I said, Jerry, listen, I just asked somebody to do something, well, a good guy. I said, now, Jerry, this is the point. I don't know what's going to happen. If these people want to show up and say Hail Marys to you, let's go along with it. So Jerry, without missing a beat, Michael, without missing a beat, he goes, Beggs, if they want me to dress like an altar boy, I'll dress like a fucking altar boy. And I was just like, oh my God. And but you know, Jerry, I can't remember him ever being really mean to anybody. You know what I mean? Yeah. Everybody can have a bad day. Lord knows I've been there. And but you know, he was pleasant to everybody. You know, remember he owned Easy Street for a couple of years. He owned Gantry's. Yep. But, and I also think he was a connection with Paul LaFerra and the pot deals that went on at Brenner Park. Yeah. And, but they, like Jerry, and Jerry was just so damn funny. He had a lot of funny friends like, him and Jimmy O'Connell, Ock. You know what I mean? You know, actually, Ock is in the Basketball Hall of Fame.
Why?
He was a writer. He was the national editor for college basketball for the AP.
No kidding.
For decades. He's in the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. Look him up. Jimmy O'Connor as a writer. Yeah.
First of all, I only knew his name as Ock.
So. Ock. What was the joke? Hey, Ock only has one sock on. Yeah, hum a few bars and I'll try to pick it up. You know what I mean? I still use that line all the time.
That and the picture, I forget who was with their dog out in the outfield, and Jerry said, a boy and his dog.
And, you know, the whole neighborhood was a cast of characters. You know, you said Chucky O'Hara before. Remember, he hung out with Jimmy Lonergan, and Jimmy Lonergan might have been the most dirtiest basketball player in the history of the game. He was all ass and elbows. He would fucking crush us.
Yep.
And then, you know, and then you had all our buddies. You know, we were very lucky growing up, you know. And, you know, I would, you know, tell guys that, you know, like I would go to a party with guys I went to the second grade with. And some of these guys said, I don't even know guys who were from my college. I said, you know, it was like I said before, Michael, it was like the fucking Wonder Years. And, you know, think about it. We could go, we've been talking about Braddock Park so much, but Queens Village Belrose was huge. We could walk everywhere, which we did. And we could go during the summer, block parties. You know what I mean? 216, 217th, up by Chris's house on 215th.
Always. So Chris told a story on this podcast, about one day he was working up at Baskin Robbins.
I was there.
And there was a block party on his street. And he was really upset because when he got home, we were all there having a great time with Mrs. Warren.
Yes.
And Chris wasn't even there. We didn't need anybody to be in a particular place. We could just be there.
Well, you know, we were not going to act, even though we were 16, 17, and drinking and stuff like that. But we didn't act like assholes.
Well, no, I don't think
we had a couple of, but, you know, Michael, Mike World broke my heart that he passed away. You know, remember the joke was when, you know, we thought it was the drink that made him a little crazy. And then when he stopped drinking, we all realized he was just fucking crazy.
He was just crazy.
He was crazy. And I loved him to death. That he would call me once in a while, make me laugh. And
yeah, and you know, he was a highly intelligent guy.
You bet your ass, brother. You bet. Yeah. That,
you know, if you allowed the crazy to settle a little bit and you had a one-on-one conversation with him.
Well, he had a tough, it was amazing, a tough childhood, man. He had a tough childhood with his father.
Yeah. Yeah, that was really hard. When I was in fifth grade, his brother and I were hit by a car, and it was right next to Kurt's Deli, where the bar was on the corner of Jamaica.
That was the Bell Parkway. The Bell.
So we got hit right there at that light.
Get the fuck out of here! I don't think I ever did it.
Yeah, and an undercover cop carried me home, but. Wow. We tried to find Mr. Whirl, and unfortunately, he couldn't walk out of the bar. He was so drunk. And so we ended up not going to the hospital for several hours because there was nobody around to take us. It was kind of, yeah.
You know, it's amazing, like you say that. When my mom died back in early 2020, Margaret McManus, I always, once in a while, I'll get a message. I'll send her a message, birthday and stuff. She told the story. I don't know if you remember, we were playing Chinese handball and she went head first into the handball wall.
Yeah.
It sounded like a ball peen hammer hitting the wall. I remember it because I was in love with the girl. You know what I mean? I sent Charlie O'Reilly he ran to my house faster than the time when he handed the cops his ID and then ran away from the cops. I got your driver's license. Come back. And so she told me she remembered that story. I was like, I remember it too, because there was, I remember the thud. The thud. It, you know, it's like if you threw, if you threw like a waterlogged softball.
Yeah.
Against the wall, it made that noise because that wall was not going to give. It was, I think people put bullet holes and never went through it. But we had that. People were going to look out for you, not just our friends. The older guys looked out. There was a couple times I got hurt in that park when I was younger, probably playing softball with the guys I shouldn't have been playing with, but they knew I could play a second base. But I mean, one time, remember Grandpa? Bobby White. I think it was Bobby White. Well, I was doing a rundown with him and I got in his way and he barreled through me like he should have. And I went out like freaking, I was out, you know, down goes Frazier, man. I was out and they carried me to my house and my mother answered the door and here's like Bobby White and Amy or whoever, Mike Dado carrying me. I'm going, Mrs. Beggins, I think he was knocked out cold. And like, you know, I had a shiner and stuff, but they were going to look out for you. Like, you know, like I mentioned before, when the park was going through some tough times with the heroin.
Yeah.
And remember Pistol Pete and Peter Evangelista and those guys?
Yeah, I do. They were older guys.
They were older than Jerry and the boys. And they were really messed up. Pistol Pete used to deal speed to Billy Joel. Yeah. Jerry Fleming used to tell me that story all the time. Billy Joel, when he was younger with the Hassles, he would buy his speed in Braddock Park. But then again, remember, I don't think it was Matt Troy. It was another congressman or representative called Braddock Park, Needle Park. It was all over the front page of the Daily News.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that.
And, you know, you try to tell, you know, people are going to believe what they want to believe. We were on the inside, Michael. At any time, did you ever feel ill at ease about something that was going on in the park?
No, that's the strange thing, because we were going up as young kids.
Yes.
You know, I have a fourth grader right now. I can't imagine him walking five or six blocks away and hanging out, quote unquote, hanging out at some park. Safety was never the issue.
Well,
I never felt unsafe.
And it went four or five blocks, Mike. You had girls like Jackie Golden, Kathy Marks, Margaret, they were coming. And
Linda.
Chris Ward, Joe Howard, they were coming a mile and a half. at least on their bicycles. And remember, I would have like 35 bicycles in my backyard. The cops would raid. And I'd have 50 kids in my backyard hiding. And my father was a sergeant with the NYPD. He didn't care. One day, the cops came in and my mother opened the door and I came in later because I probably went a different way. And it was 20 people sitting on in my living room floor watching an NCAA basketball game right now from the cops. And here's my father like, okay, sit down. The cops are leaving. You can go. And we would have 20, 30 bikes in my mother's backyard because they would get stolen. You know what I mean? It was a prime opportunity. You couldn't keep an eye on it all the time. But it was funny, man. Funny as hell.
Who else? Who else do you remember?
Oh, God. I go to them all.
I know.
Remember, I'll go to a name that Artie LeDrew. Remember Artie LeDrew?
Gosh. You know that there were a couple of Artie LeDrews, kind of like older men.
That would hang out.
Yeah, that clearly had some. Do you remember the guy who would always preach? He would always carry a Bible with him, and he was always preaching to us. I don't think I ever remembered his name, but he also had a kind of a. And then there was a guy who always introduced himself as Sandy Koufax.
Yes, yes.
And he was there for a while. But we always had, you know, and then Quack. Even though he was employed.
He was employed. He was the parky. He would take us to summer league, you know, punch ball tournaments, and he'd run the knock hockey tournaments and stuff.
But I remember this.
We'd have 200 people on a Monday, Tuesday afternoon at the park. They came from all over the place. You know what I mean? You had the people from St. Gregory's, not just Our Lady Lord, you had St. Gregory's there, PS 33. You know, PS 18 and all that stuff. And it was like
the park was an amazing center for so many different on a busy Saturday. The park was packed.
I know
a couple of hundred kids there.
And it was hilarious. Like I said before, you could in a wall one day, you could play basketball, softball game, handball, touch football, go on the swings. You know, walk over to K&L Deli or Kurt's Deli.
We used to play Johnny on the pony. Remember Johnny
Ride the Pony was out. Oh my God! There's a picture. I know that you. I think you took it. I wouldn't have taken it.
I took it. It's a picture of me and you. I think Mike Whirl
and a cat. Yeah, but
we're
there's
all
a picture
holding
of
on to one of our limbs.
Kathy Marks.
Kathy Marks. Yeah.
Yeah, she's a. She married a guy from Malloy. I can't tell you the last time I saw her. It might have been at one of Marianne Cook's reunion. She looks stunning. She looked great. Always a great girl. But and then you had like Jackie Golden, Terry McDonough, Terry Castano. Now she got married young and she lives in Florida now. She's a friend of mine on Facebook.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, she's. She's very cool. I talked. Joey Andres calls me once every couple of weeks just to check in. He's done very, very well for himself. You know, he had his problems. But he was a money man for Lynyrd Skynyrd, 38 special.
No kidding.
Oh yeah, no bullshit. And he saved them their money, and he still works hard. He was just up in New York. I think he sent me the picture of Jerry's plaque.
No, who did that?
That was started like the day after, maybe the day of Jerry's funeral. I believe it was in January, I'm going to say 2004. Yeah. And Gene Black, remember Kevin Black? Tommy Black was a year older than us. Gene Black was living in Atlanta, came up with that. And I guess after the funeral, they were sitting in the bar and they said, fucking, we can do anything we want. We'll go get one. And they went to like a trophy store and they did it right away. And they went home and someone got and it was a different one than the one I sent you because that was 25 years ago, you know, 20 years ago when Jerry died. And they put that up there. And the newer one was put up by Joey Tersey. Joey Tursi was an Our Lady of Lourdes guy, probably 3 or 4 years older than us. I think you remember him. He was the youngest guy. He used to work at Shea Stadium selling the beers, and he was a nice guy. And he would hand, you know, we were 12, 13 years old, and he'd hand you a beer. You know what I mean? It didn't cost him anything. But Joey Tursi did that just recently. You see how shiny and new it is? It's brand new. Yeah. It's a year and a half old. And I always thought it was. What?
Remember the one you sent me? You sent me a picture of the old one.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, but I think I recently sent you one of the new one. Yeah, and I sent the old one years ago.
Yeah, that's right.
But Jerry was, like you said, we said before, he was the mayor. And you needed something, you could always ask Jerry. He always had a connection somewhere. You know, how, man, I'd love to go to that Met game. Thanks. Call so-and-so. And back then, you had to go home, get on the phone and say, Jerry told me to call you. And somehow things got done. I really liked Jerry because he treated everybody with respect. Even though we were younger kids, guys could be real dicks. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And even though, like, growing up, of course, when Jerry was 18, he wasn't going to hang out when we were 12. But when he was 21 and then we're 16, 17, and we're hanging out and it just became hanging out in the park, you know, like with Johnny Fleming and Head, you know, Jamie. Yep. And Johnny Fleming just retired from the Juneau Police Department after 12 years. So he retired from the NYPD and then he moved down there and now he just retired from the Juneau Police. So I talked to him a couple days ago. And he sounds great. He sounds great.
John Juneau, Alaska? Juneau?
Who? Alaska Juneau, yeah. No, Florida Juneau.
Oh, Juneau down there. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I hear Juneau. I'm a Florida guy. I've been here now, Mick, for
And whatever happened to Jamie?
Jamie is a local 3 guy making great money. Really got away from the bad stuff they were into. You know, there was a whole crew of those kids, Jamie's age. That was when, like, Angel Dust and shit hit. And that was a scourge. You'd see some of these guys humping a fucking telephone pole outside Foxy's. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that was terrible stuff. That was something none of our buddies got into. You know what I mean? We had our beers. I didn't even like pot, to tell you the truth. Pot would give me an upset stomach. And of early 80s, we all dabbled in, you know, the other stuff a little bit. But then, you know, thank God in 1985, I got sworn in with the PD and I realized I could never look my father in the face if I ever, like, doled off the job.
Right.
So pot and anything else that you would do would just never get done because,
actually, we came out as a group pretty unscathed.
You're right. You know, And we were lucky, but we had a lot of all our guys were level-headed. I always felt, you know, like I said before, we could all be assholes because Lord knows I fucking look in the mirror once in a while. I see myself as one. but it's just I think we all kept tabs on each other. You know what I mean? Like Michael, I don't know. I don't think Sherlock Holmes could have kept tabs on Michael. You know what I mean?
I'll tell you a quick story about him. You know, I was writing a lot in college.
You told me that. Yeah.
And I can't remember how I got it, but someone sent me an address in Bayside from Michael Wuerl.
He lived there for a while. Yeah.
So I wrote him a letter. And then I came home one day from college and we were out somewhere, you know, maybe Easy Street or something. And he came over to me and he said, can you step outside for a minute? And I was like, yeah, you know, something I said. And we went outside and he reached into his pocket. You know, he used to always wear like a jacket, like a suit jacket. And he pulls out this letter and he said, I carry this with me wherever I go. You saved my life with this. And I said, I'm sorry. I just wrote you a letter. That was it. He goes, you don't understand. Nobody knew where I lived. And this just came at a really bad time for me and really helped me get through. So I carry it with me.
He popped in at Paul's house, Paul Lonigan's house. And you remember Paul's nephews, little Stevie Accutino?
Yeah.
He had the Down syndrome. Well,
yeah.
We would run. You might have been in college by then up in Syracuse, but he would run the football pool every week, boxes. And $1 a box, 100 boxes, $50, 50, half would go to the Stephen Jr. Fund to send them to camp.
Nice.
In the summertime, and the other $50. And usually, I won a couple of times, I take the 40, I throw another 10 in.
So,
Super Bowl Sunday, Big Daddy, Big Steve. Remember how big that guy was? That guy was like, he was the size of a refrigerator. And Paul took him in to the hallway by the front door. Now, if you remember Paul's house, you walk through the front door, and there was that hallway that before you got into the living room on both walls, on both sides. And Paul had to hold up Steve. We had raised like 1,800 out of 2,100 they needed for the 6-week camp. And we did that probably about 6 or 7 years in a row. And Big Daddy, after that, you could really never buy a beer around Big Daddy because he wanted to know who was involved. But then you'd have guys who would win and throw the whole thing in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm going to win a little money. I want to put some in my pocket. You know what I mean? I guess I'm not that great of a Catholic. I might have met Mother Teresa, but I hate Mother Teresa, you know.
But, you know, it's a great story because it just said, you know, the kinds of things that we did or people did to take care of each other, you know. Whether you knew that kid or he was part of your family, didn't matter. You were part of the pool because it was the right thing to do.
Yeah. And it really was. And, you know, Paul was always going to take care of you, too. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you know, Paul was making more cash, you know, with that, you know, with the
chimneys.
He did the chimneys from the time I think he was like a sophomore in Van Buren, and he's still doing them now. I used to say to him and Bobby, if I ever find your slush fund, I'm going to take it because I know it's a lot of money somewhere, you know.
No, we met the guys that they bought that company was the jewelers on 222nd Street in Jamaica Avenue. There was a jewelry shop on the corner.
Right.
Well, the jewelry store was owned by the mom, and the son, even though he kind of worked there, he ran the chimney cleaning out of the back. And they would hire us to put the flyers in people's mailboxes, right?
Yeah.
Me and Paul and Bobby, and maybe you came along too sometimes. But he would drop you on a corner, and you'd have to walk all the way, like from Jamaica Avenue to Hillside Avenue on 215th Street, go to every single door. And so that's how we met them. And then, you know, after a few years, Bobby and Paul bought him out, which was amazing.
Which was really great because those guys worked. And, you know, Bobby actually was a fireman for 5 years and he had to quit.
I didn't know that.
Of course. No. He was down there and he quit because Paul couldn't do it himself. So we had to make a decision. Marianne, his wife, was NYPD. So they weren't going to lose anything on the health coverage and stuff. And so Bobby and Paul, Bobby came, and the rest is history. I believe, I don't think I'm talking out of turn, but if I am, well, sorry. they're looking to sell it within the next year and a half.
Nice.
Good. Bobby's got a beautiful house up in Lake George that we've gone up a couple of times with the boys. Paul's got a place somewhere in Pennsylvania. But last year we were there. And you know, it sucks. 4 years ago, we're there with Charlie O was there, and then he passed away, which was really a shame. And then 2 years ago, we were there, and then this year, Mike World dies. So we have to get back up there, not to kill anybody, but get back.
Before we lose somebody.
Yeah, Mike had a great line. We were sitting there, eating, drinking, be merry. And he started telling people that he had his problem with his heart. His heart was pretty fucked up.
Really?
And he goes, and you guys really never thought I had a heart. So I fooled you. I do have a heart. And his heart was in pretty crappy shape. Mike's a good dude. He used to text me a lot when I had the cancer a couple of years back, you know. And that's why I fucking hate cancer. It got my mother, my baby sister, Kathleen's wake was on December 31st, funeral. December 31st. No, no, December 30th. The next day I got on a plane, came back to Florida. My ENT stayed open on New Year's Eve day and did the biopsy right there, December 31st. And he said, I'll give you one shot or two shots. I said, well, I'd rather have one. He goes, well, the one's going to be the numb you. I said, fuck it. Just stick it in. He stuck the needle in. It was huge, man. About 4 or 5 inches worth. And he took it out and he said, John, you got cancer. He goes, I'm going to send it out to the lab, of course, but you have cancer. I looked at him like, what do I do? He goes, well, it's December 31st and you got 2 shitty years in front of you. I'd go get fucking drunk. So me and Nina just right then and there, man, let's go. And then everything happened from there, you know, from the chemo and the radiation and all that shit.
You did really well through that.
I got very lucky. They caught it very early, Michael. And I had an amazing team. From Nina's sister Mary was the nurse practitioner that ran the whole office with Johnny Morrow, Dr. John Morrow. And I had Nina here, of course. And it was right during the COVID. So Emily came home. Her boss said, "You can do your job from helping your father." So she was here a lot the whole time. So was Hannah and Jack. And, you know, the chemo and the radiation was, I got through it. I worked until April. And then, like, on April 2nd, I hit a wall like, oh, my God, like Evel Knievel would hit the ground. And I couldn't get off the couch. I couldn't get off the couch for, like, 3 months, man.
Wow.
I'd lost, like, 45 pounds. I gained most of that back, which I was kind of expecting to. Yeah. But, and I got very lucky. You know, worse was, you know, my baby sister, Kathleen. That's just fucking criminal. Makes you doubt shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, I would have gave it up. I would have gave it up myself. You know. My mother was 94. Okay. She lived forever. Kathleen. Nah, that was bullshit, Mike. You know.
How's your brother? How's Jimmy?
Jimmy's doing wonderful. His oldest daughter Olivia just got her PhD. Just the other day. Yeah. Yeah. And Genevieve is going for her master's, I believe, in Baruch in the city. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah. Jeannie Murphy is doing great. Still funniest girl around, you know. And Jimmy's doing great. He really is. I try to talk to him once a week, and I'm going to see them less than 2 weeks. I'll be up in New York for they're having a benefit at Garden City Country Club. I think we know a guy who used to run that thing, Joey Howard, right? And for the hospice that took care of Kathleen. So I'll go up there and spend a good amount of change. You know what I mean? But let's get away from the sad stuff. Let's got any more questions about the neighborhood? We'll do that. I don't care.
Well, final thought on the question of why? Why did we have this unbelievable group, and I say had, but really we have.
The
people that I'm in touch with, and you're in touch with so many more people than I am.
Give me a second. But, give me a second. Hold on.
Yeah.
that the people we grew up with and the people we're in touch with. Yeah, go on.
What's your sense of how this came about and how we stayed together, because it really is a phenomenon. As you said, there isn't anybody that I've ever met that could even say that they knew one person from elementary school, never mind, you know, I've got 60 people I could call that I went to first grade with. You know, what made that?
We're not just talking about our group of crazies, from the girls to the guys, from, like, you know, Linda Benvenuta. Linda is still a friend of mine on Facebook. And she was texting me a lot. I think Joe got in touch with some of the girls, like Angela and stuff, like Angela Diver and stuff. And these are all names that, you know, like when you got in touch with me about this, I said, this is anything you want, Mick. I love you, man. Yeah. We know each other a long time. And this is easy. Actually, you know, this is a ground ball. I believe we were like birds of a feather. We were all from the same neighborhood, same kind of family, same kind of background. We went to all grammar school together, always hung out. We did, you know, we got in some stupid trouble. We did, but yeah. none of us was really, really out there. Couple sitting in the back of a police car. My father's a sergeant. My father's a captain. Well, you come up and say, oh, my father's a commissioner. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got my ass kicked for that.
But you know what I mean? But we had great parents, too.
Yeah.
Like Mr. Warren, your dad, always funny, made me giggle. You know, you had Joe's father, and you know, Patrick Orvis's father. We haven't even mentioned Patrick. He was your next door neighbor your whole life.
I know.
Patrick Corbis's father was the oldest living chief in the FD. I think he collected his pension for like 57 years or something.
I think he's still alive.
No, he passed away about a year and a half ago.
Oh, okay. Because I saw something from Pat. They had a reunion or they gave him an award or something.
Yeah. That was on the news. That was on CBS News. They covered it because he was like the oldest living chief.
Unbelievable. Yeah, I remember him well. I remember Mrs. Orvis well. Chris and I were talking about Mrs. Sojin and what an amazing person she was.
Lady. Wasn't she wonderful, man?
Oh, I just, you know, for me, I always felt like she had an agreement with my mother that when my mother wasn't around, she was my mother.
Cool.
And she'd make sure I was fed, and she, if I got out of line, she had no problem, you know, giving me what for.
Well, you break that thing, you bought it. We grew up with that.
Yeah. And but that's the thing. It's a culture that we grew up in that's just so amazing to me.
Well,
because it took place on so many levels, you know.
You know, people are, I can't tell you how many Saturday mornings someone would knock on the door and my mother would have them in and make them like a fucking piece of French toast.
Yep.
You know what I mean? This happened hundreds of times. People come to the park, you know. Yeah. And I said to her once, does that bother you? And she goes, John, it's a piece of bread and some eggs. Let it eat. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, we had, you know, there were people who showed up every Saturday. Might've been the only breakfast they got. I don't know. You know, my brother Jimmy's friends and guys like that. And,
It was a remarkable time. You know, and I appreciate it. We're at the hour mark, JB.
If you want to do more, you can always start this up another time.
I'm going to circle back to you. I'm meeting with Linda. I think I told you Linda and Annie McNeely and Marianne.
Yeah.
Riles. I'm meeting with Riles on Monday. So we'll have a talk with Riles.
You know what you got to do? You got to give Jimmy the finger. Yeah, just give him the finger, you know. We were at one of Marianne Cook's reunions. I hadn't seen Riles in, I don't know, 5 years. And he walked by me through the middle of the dance floor. And I looked over, I went to wave. And he just kept walking, gave me the finger. I started crying. I was laughing so hard. And Nina's going, well, does he get mad at you? I said, no, that's Jimmy. He gave everybody the finger. You know what I mean? And at one of those reunions, I took Nina home and she goes, listen, if one more girl told me how nice you were to them, I'm going to fucking punch. I was getting crazy. Of course, they were telling Nina how nice I was to them. And Peggy Lonergan was getting how much of a pain in the ass Paul was in the eighth grade. It was funny as hell.
That's great. All right, GB. Great talking to you as always.
Michael, God bless you, man. I love you. And if you need anything, give me a yell.
I will.
It was a blast from the past. I love you, man. You be well and good luck with the whole project.
All right. I'll talk to you. I'll follow up with you with the results.
Anything you